Okay, so this is the last sheet on the issue of the Rabbonons, and there are some important factors we need to get clear. I'm not going to read every source on the sheet, but I want you to just be aware that within the system of Chazal, they don't have absolute power in the sense that they can do anything they like. There are built-in restrictions, and some of them are actually very interesting grassroots restrictions as to how this works. So let's have a look at them briefly. The first one is that the rabbis, of course, cannot really generally overrule the Torah. If the Torah says don't eat pork, the rabbis can't say, well, we actually feel you should eat pork. Because God's authority obviously is ultimate, and the rabbis have no ability to do that. And therefore, the Gemara in Gittin that I brought at the beginning, where they introduced the idea of Shmit, of Prosbul, that the Torah says that there's a mitzvah doraisa, a positive mitzvah to release a debt at the end of the Shemitah year. Most people pass it at the end of the Shemitah year, which is coming up at the end of this year. And comes along Hillel and devises a system whereby you don't have to release that debt. How can the rabbis do something which circumvents the Torah? So the Gemara answers in number two, it's different. Here it's different. Amar Abaya, Shev Va'al Taseh Hu. It's a Shev Va'al Taseh. This is a very important principle. Meaning, even though the rabbis don't have the authority to allow that which the Torah does not allow, they do have the authority to tell you not to do something, Shev Va'al Taseh, sit down and don't do it, when the Torah says yes to do it. Meaning, this is the way, this is the reason, the authority they have, for example, on Rosh Hashanah, which falls on Shabbos, where there's a mitzvah in the Torah to blow the shofar, because it's Rosh Hashanah, Chazal can turn around and say, you know something? Shev Va'al Taseh. Better you should not blow the shofar, because we worry people are going to break Shabbos. So, if you like, in the long-term view of protecting the Torah, they can tell you not to do a mitzvah, even though the Torah says yes to do it. For example, with lulav, turn around and say you can't carry lulav and Shabbos either. Now, interestingly, they do not turn around and say you can't do bris milah on Shabbos. You'd have thought they might turn around and say, well, we worry people might carry the baby to the shul, or wheel the baby in a stroller, they're going to break the Torah, so we're going to ban all bris milah on Shabbos.
They could prepare the stuff beforehand.
They could, but you could also prepare your shofar beforehand and take it to the house so you didn't... But still they said you can't blow shofar on Shabbos. Why did they say for shofar that they overrode the Torah, but for bris milah they did not? So that is the... What's that?
Weren't they worried that carrying?
Correct, but why aren't they worried about the baby? It's much more likely that someone's going to carry a baby for a bris milah on Shabbos than someone is not going to know how to blow the shofar. They're going to take the shofar to someone and ask how to blow it. Which is more likely, isn't it? More likely they're going to carry the baby. And yet Chazal never come along and say, don't do bris milahs on Shabbos. Why? So that was the source that I gave you that you didn't probably read in number three, unless you have time at the end, where the Taz asks this question, and the answer that the Taz gives is, because Chazal learned that there's a specific posuk in the Torah saying you must do bris milah on Shabbos. It's learnt out from a posuk by Yom HaShmini, even if Yom HaShmini is Shabbos, and therefore where the Torah has a very specific injunction saying, yes, you must do this, there Chazal said, okay, we're not going to override that. If there's a general mitzvah, blow the shofar on Rosh Hashanah, and it happens to be that Rosh Hashanah sometimes falls on Shabbos, so then Chazal can turn around and say, okay, fine, you know something, you blow the shofar every other year, you're not going to blow the shofar this year because we're worried people are going to carry, going to override the Torah. But where the Torah specifically says you must do the bris milah, even though it's Shabbos because it's the eighth day, so okay, the Torah said you must, that's the end of that, we can't do anything more than that. And therefore Chazal have the authority to override the Torah only to tell you not to do positive mitzvah, and only when it's a more general mitzvah rather than a specific injunction. Yes, Michal.
When you wrote over here that you're prohibited from carrying the milah knife, does that mean that you can still do brit milah, it just needs to be there?
Yeah.
You can't carry, so what about carrying the baby there?
Oh, so again, so Chazal...
You can't carry the knife, like...
So Chazal, you can't carry the baby either. But Chazal weren't prepared to, even though you need the milah knife on Shabbos, otherwise you can't do the milah, and there's a mitzvah to do the milah, Chazal said you still absolutely cannot override the Torah, you can't carry the knife on Shabbos, okay, even though there is a Torah mitzvah to do bris milah, because they said, look, carrying the knife, you could do the knife before. You could take the knife there before. Ah, you could also take the baby there before. So the knife that...
Can you put a knife in shul?
Right, well, they do the Bris Milah at home. They normally do either to Brises on Shabbos, they do it in the house.
Yeah, every time they do it on Shabbos.
They do it in the house normally. But Chazal wouldn't prepare to prohibit Bris Milah on Shabbos because there's a mitzvah specifically on the eighth day. The knife? There's no mitzvah specifically on the knife. You could prepare the knife before, yes.
Arabs aren't an invention of the 21st century.
No, correct. They had Arabs then as well.
So then why can't they just say, if there's an Arab, then you...
Interestingly, they were so worried about people being Mechal al Shabbos, because not everywhere had an Erev, for sure. Even though Erev existed already thousands of years before this, anyway. Erev is very ancient. Even though there's such a thing as Erev, Chazal are very worried about breaking Shabbos. There's nothing worse than breaking Shabbos, almost, in the Torah. Breaking Shabbos, we're so desensitized to breaking Shabbos, because unfortunately there are so many people around us that break Shabbos, that we've lost a sense of, you know, if we saw, obviously, you know, if we saw someone walk up the street and hit somebody in front of us, we would get very shocked by that. We probably need some kind of therapy. We need to sit down and have a cup of tea. You know, someone just walked up to someone and hit them in front of me. We wouldn't just get on with our normal lives. And yet, if we see people get in the car and drive on Shabbos, we just, okay, you know something? People do that. I understand why we feel that way, but we have to kind of resensitize ourselves to how important Shabbos is, and you see from this that point. Now, source number four is Harasha, which, just like we saw with the Novi, with Eliyahu Novi, that even though Chazal can't override the Torah on a permanent basis, on a temporary basis, they can do even a negative, override a negative mitzvah. Look at the Rambam number four. Yesh lebeis din la'akol af dvarim elu lefi sha'a. They can override anything on a temporary basis. Afal pishu hu katan min ha'rishonim, even though the beis din is smaller than earlier batei din. Even divrei Torah yesh l'kol beis din la'akra horad shah. So this principle of horad shah, throughout history, there were batei din for certain reasons that felt that the time really needed it and the situation really required it. And the Rambam gives an interesting example at the end where he says, "Kashem shaharoyfe choytech yadu or ragla shelzeh kidei sheyichya kula." Just like the doctor will amputate a limb to save the individual, kach based in moirim bizman min asmanim. As long as it's on a temporary one-off basis, the based in compaskan to override one limb of the Torah, lavor ksas mitzvahs lefisha, on a temporary basis, kadesh kamu kulam, to protect the Torah in the long term. And I brought you the examples given in the Gemara where there was at the time of the Chashmonaim, they felt there was an incredible amount of breach of different kind of mitzvahs, and therefore this guy was riding a horse on Shabbos. Even though riding a horse on Shabbos is an issur rabbanon, you're not chayiv misa for riding a horse on Shabbos. Nevertheless, they found that he was riding a horse, and they gave him skila. Says the Gemara, lo mipnei sheroy lekach, in source number 5, not because that's the correct official punishment, ela shehasha tzricha lekach. He needed that, and it was a very rare thing. Of course, that's just the Sanhedrin. The Sanhedrin have this power. We're not talking about today's rabbis. The Sanhedrin had this power. Similarly, the second case where somebody committed an act of what I think they call these days gross indecency, okay, in public, and didn't care, so they also gave him a death penalty. Why? Not because someone's chayv misa for having relations with their wife in public. That's what it meant. No, it didn't mean that here. He had relations with her in public.
Yeah.
It says he hit her? I don't believe it means that here. You can't hit anyone in public either, that's for sure. But here it was, here was something which was a public display of something which is highly inappropriate, and they did that fine. So that is the first principle, that the rabbis cannot override the Torah. Guys, if I talk loudly, will you stop me? Someone put their hands up and say, "Rabbi, talk quietly." Okay, sorry. Now, so yeah, exactly. So the first thing is they can override the Torah only Sheva Al Tase or Harat Shah. Yes, Michal.
I can't remember exactly what it was when I asked you, but it was coming from a phone.
We'll get there. We're getting there right now. Good. I'm glad you mentioned it again. The second thing, because I'll come to it right now. The second thing that they can't always do is override each other. And there are three important halachas in the Rambam. You need to know these. So look at these three halachas with me in the Rambam. Let's say you have a Sanhedrin. And again, we're talking about the Sanhedrin. And it doesn't like a drosha that a previous Sanhedrin made. And it wants to overrule it. Can it change? Now, we haven't dealt with droshas yet, but we are next week. Let me tell you what my plan is, my evil, cunning plan. This is my plan for next week. I've got three more sessions with you before I go away. Okay? And I want to fill in the missing gap, which is we have to understand what droshas are, because we haven't really talked about how Chazal do that. So I want to do that next week. And then maybe there'll be time for one extra share on Thursday. And then when I get back, because I don't want to start this before I get back because it's too big a topic. When I get back, I want to deal with the issue of multiple truths. And what does it mean that there are multiple truths? It's a really fascinating sugya. And some of you who do Teremisi and I have been doing that as well. But we are going to do that, and maybe we'll get some different perspectives on that. So we're going to do that as soon as I get back. But I'm going to fill in the gap in terms of droshas for Ezrat Hashem next week. For now, if Chazal in the Sanhedrin want to override a drosha, can they? So the answer is yes. Interestingly, look at number six. Based in Gadol, if the Sanhedrin, Shidarshu ba'achas min amidas, the darshan with one of the midas, according to what they feel is appropriate. Shehadin kach, that this is the halacha, the danu din, and they gave that din. The amad achreichim based in, then a later based in come along in the Sanhedrin. The nira lo tamacher, and they have a different opinion. They don't understand the psuk in the same way. Listor oisai, and they want to contradict the earlier based in. Hariz esoisai, they can do that. The dan nafi mashinira beinah, they can do whatever they feel is appropriate. Shenemar, as it says. Your judges, in your day, your Sanhedrin has the full authority. Even if they're smaller, even if they're less, not smaller in number because the Beis Din was always 71, but even if they're a lesser quality Beis Din, this idea of Yiftach B'Doro K'Shmul B'Doro. If you happen to live in a door where Yiftach is your leader, then that's your leader. People, each generation gets the leaders it deserves. And therefore, what's fascinating about this is it allows any future Beis Din to change the way that it understands the Pesukim and not have to be bound by the previous Beis Din. Now, we can't do this today, which is one of the reasons why our Torah today is not the ultimate, optimal Torah. We meant to have a Torah where the Bat Din in each generation can change the way that it understands the Torah and override the previous generations. I want you to understand that in the system it's built like that. The fact that we can't do that today is something we should cry over as part of Golas, that we can't do that. Yes, Hannah.
So I was in a class where we had a shiur on the same kind in high school where we learned and we compared and contrasted the way the halakha process the constitution. So are you saying that the Torah would be a lot similar to the American Constitution and its amendments in like let's say the 19th Amendment with the prohibition and then revoking the prohibition?
Except,
be a lot similar if we
yes, yes. Except that the constitution itself can always be changed, okay. Whereas the Torah Shebichtav cannot. So we ultimately always have a red line, which is the Torah Shebichtav, which is Min Hashamayim. We can't override the Pesukim. We can change the way we understand the Pesukim. But if something is clear, if it says you cannot eat pork, we can't interpret that to mean you can eat pork. Yeah. And if certain sexual relationships are prohibited, we can't pretend that they're not. But within the realms of interpretation, we are not bound in principle by any previous generation. Of course, we are today. We are bound by Chazal, but that is a situation which is a product of Galut. That's very clear in the Rambam. Yes? No, because we're going to deal with that next time in full, and I'll get distracted today. Okay, let me give you an example. Okay, you know something, Michal? I will give you an example. The addendum that I put at the end of the sheet that most of you didn't get to is a beautiful piece. I'm not going to read the whole thing. It's a beautiful piece about Megillat Rut by the Briska Rav. The Briska Rav has a fascinating insight, and he asked the following. You remember the story of Rut? So Rut goes to Boaz and says to him, I want you to redeem me. I want you to do a kind of yibum. It's not really yibum, it's a kind of yibum arrangement. And what does Boaz say? He says, there's someone else that comes before me in line. I have to ask him first. So he goes to Ploni Almoni, and he says to him, do you want to redeem all Rus's fields? And what does Ploni Almoni answer?
No.
Yes, he says. Boaz then says to him, but you know that if you do that, you have to also marry Rut. And then what does Ploni Almoni say? No. So it's very interesting. If you look what reason he gives, turn for a second to page 4. And you look at these psukim from Megillat Rut. Pick it up from Pasuk Hey. Vayomer Boaz, and Boaz says to him, "Beyom knoitcha hasade miyad Naomi. If you want to buy the field, if you want to redeem the field from Naomi, umi etrut hamovia eshet hameit. Okay. If you want to do that, you have to buy it also from Rut hamovia, the dead, the wife of the dead person. Okay. Can you see? You're also buying from her. La hakim shem hameit al nacharato." you have to uphold the name of the, you have to you be there to produce a child that will, if you like, be a Gilgul, as the Ramban understands it, of the dead brother, etc. You have, it's like it's an all or nothing deal. If you take the field, you take roots. And if you don't take roots, you can't take the field. So what does he answer? The Yom HaGol, the girl says, Lo Chaldigol, I'm sorry, I can't do it right now. Pen Ashchit et Nachalati. What does that mean? Pen Ashchit et Nachalati. My Nachala will be destroyed. My Nachala will be destroyed. So Rashi says, Pen Ashchit et Nachalati. Zari, I'm going to mess up my children. Latet Pagam Bazari, my children are going to have a blemish. They're going to have poor Yichus. Shanam, as it says, Lo Yavo Amoni Amoavi. You cannot marry a Moabite or an Ammonite, okay? V'ta bo amoni v'lo amonis. And he made the mistake of thinking that it's the all of the Moavim are prohibited, but actually it's just the men, not the women. Now, the Briska Rav asked a very fascinating question, which is, why doesn't he just turn around to Boaz and say to Boaz, I can't marry Rus, why? Because I'm not allowed to marry Rus. Because she's a Moabite. Why does he start talking about his children? No, if someone introduced you to a woman who wasn't, if a man to a woman who wasn't Jewish, and said, will you marry this woman? He wouldn't say, well, I can't marry this woman because then my kids won't be Jewish. He'd say, I can't marry this woman, why? Because she's not Jewish and I'm not allowed to marry her. Or if someone wants to marry a mamzer, they won't say, well, I can't marry this mamzer because then my kids will be mamzer. And they say, I can't marry this woman, I'm not allowed to marry a mamzer. So the Briska Rav comes along and says something fascinating. Ploni Almoni turns around to Boaz and says, look, Boaz, you are the head of the Beis Din. You are the head of the Sanhedrin. You've paskened that it means Moavi, below Moaviyah. That the males are prohibited, but the females are not. So, okay, you know something? You're my Rav. I go with your Psak. As far as you're concerned, I can marry this woman. But what happens in 50 years, in 100 years, if a new Sanhedrin comes along and does the drosha the other way, and paskens that actually a Moaviyah is Osir? I'm all right, because I relied on your Psak. But my kids are all going to be, you know, possible. Because the Beis Din has changed its mind. I'm not prepared to take the risk of a later Beis Din changing the drosha. You can take that risk if you want, but I'm not taking that risk. Which is interesting, because this is, if you like, halacha in action. That's why Ploni Almoni is worried about his kids and not worried about him. He can rely on Boaz, who is the head of the Sanhedrin, but his kids, what are they going to do? Yeah.
Is he allowed to do that?
Is he allowed to do that?
Is he allowed to say, like, I'm going to, based on the future, meaning he's allowed to not marry her, but is he allowed to not marry her based on that fact and the future?
It's his choice whether he wants to be the goal or not. He can have whatever he reasons he likes. He can say, I don't want to marry her because, you know, I don't like the look of her face, or whatever it is, or because I don't want to go live in Otzenplatz. If there's someone else to be the goal, he can step aside for the other girl. Like a Yava in the Yibum situation, if the older brother doesn't want to do Yibum, so the younger brother can do Yibum. Right. Okay, the mitzvah is on the older brother, but he can step aside. So here he's worried about the drosha aspect, which I think is a fascinating application of what we just learned. Yes, Hannah.
Like a very embarrassing,
okay,
like massage, and you should feel really bad about yourself for not doing
it. Okay, but this is not a case of Chalitza. Someone else could do the Yibum. It wasn't correct. This is not really Yibum halachically, because these people are not the brothers anyway, they're the cousins. But and anyway, if there's a Yavam who doesn't want to do it, but there's a younger brother who does, so there's no Chalitza, the younger brother does it. Anyway, let's move on. I need to move on. I feel bad for you. Alright, number seven. So, In terms of later generations, the later generations can always override the earlier ones. Okay, am I talking too loudly? I am a little bit. Number seven. Okay. What about Gezeris? So look here, the Rambam says number seven. Based in Shigazru Gezeru Tiknu Takana. This is not Drosh now, this is a Gezera. Number four and five, or a Takana. Then Higu Minag, or Minhag, that they institute. Upasha Tadava B'chol Yisrael, and the Jewish people accept it. The Amadach Rehim based in Acher, and the later based in wants to pick up, will bikish the battle Devarim Harishim. They want to cancel the earlier one. It's not a drosha, it's a takona. Ula Akko Oisa Takona, the Oisa Gezer, Oisa Minhag. Eini Yochel Achia Godel Min Aroshim with the Chachma Ominion. So there's a different rule. The later Sanhedrin can overrule an earlier takona, but only if they're bigger in Chachma and Minion. So what does Chachma mean?
Smarter.
They're smarter. What does Minion mean? So the number of the Beis Din is always 71. So what does it mean, minion? Means followers. So the Rambam says at the end there, Heich yeh gedoli mehem b'minion. How can they ever be bigger in minion? A Beis Din is a fixed minion, Sanhedrin. Hoyo v'kach Beis Din Beis Din, kol Beis Din Beis Din shivim v'echad. The minion chach mehador shehizkimu v'kiblu hadama. It means it's how many followers they've got, how many people are really into them. Now, what's very interesting here is that the halacha, says the Rambam, is stricter with a takana than with a drosha. when it comes to interpreting the psukim, every later Beis Din has the ability to override every early one, even if they're smaller. When it comes to a takana, then the later Batei Din can only override if they're Godel Beminyan. Okay? Are you leaving? So go. Okay? If they're Godel Beminyan. Which is interesting because we're strict in this sense. And the Rambam's position on Gezeiros is the strictest of all. If you look at number 8, the Madvarim Amurim, when does this apply? And this I'll pick up on Michal's point. Shaloi Osra Oisan Kedei La'asot Siag L'Tera. We're only talking about takanas which are not siag, which are not offense. Ale Keshah Dinei Tera. If the Beis Din decided to make a offense around the Torah, in Pasha Yisurim B'chol Yisrael, as long as the Jewish people accepted it, Ein Beis Din Gadol Acher, no later Beis Din ever, Yochel Akron can uproot that Lahatiran to allow it, Afilu Hayah Gadol Min Hashem, even if they're greater. So says the Rambam, there's three levels. When it comes to droshas, anyone can overrule an earlier Beis Din, even if they're smaller. When it comes to takanas and normal gezeiras, they can overrule them if they're bigger. But when it comes to siagim, when it comes to fences, says the Rambam has a position that no later Beis Din can ever override an earlier Beis Din as long as the siag was accepted by the Jewish people. Which is very interesting because that does, this is machlokas by the way, and there are other people that disagree with this. The question as to whether the later Beis Din can ever override a siag of an earlier Beis Din. Yes?
So, two things. One, it seems kind of counterintuitive to me.
That's one of the reasons it's a machlokas here. There are other, the Tosfos, for example, doesn't agree with this necessarily. There are other people that debate about this, but according to the, and it is a little bit counterintuitive, when it comes to the Doraisas and understanding the Pesukim, so Chazal have total authority to override anybody beforehand. But when it comes to Gezeiros, they seem to be able to bind themselves, which is very interesting. Today, by the way, but this is Michal's point that she raised before, what can we do today? Because we can't override any of these things, because we don't have any Sanhedrin, certainly not one which is Godel B'chochma or Meminyan. So one of the things I want to mention, and which I'm going to do a whole sheet on later on, is the following. Sometimes, when it comes to a Drabbonon, if you're able to identify very, very clearly the reason why Chazal made that Drabbonon, and the reason no longer applies, then according to some, and this is a very big machlokas in the Rishonim, according to some Rishonim, if you're sufficiently confident that you know the reason, and the reason really has gone away, then you can change the halacha. Not because you're overriding the gezera, you're upholding the gezera, but the gezera just doesn't apply anymore, because it only applied in a specific circumstance. Let me give you three or four examples, but I'm going to give you a proper sheet on this. A classic example is Chalav Yisrael, much misunderstood by people. Chazal made a gezeira, bless you. Chazal made a gezeira, and this is a gezeira, it's a siag, that you cannot drink milk which has been milked by a non-Jew unless a Jew is watching. What is the reason?
So that it wouldn't be like pig milk.
Right, because lots of animals' milk which is not kosher got mixed in, and still to this day in other parts of the world they mix stuff in, who cares?
But the FDA...
Oh, so we'll get to that in a second. So Chazal made a gezeira, you can't drink the milk because it may have had stuff mixed in. If a Jew is watching, then you can. Fine, that's a din d'rabbanon. It's not a chumrah, it's a din d'rabbanon. If you go to Africa, then you are not allowed to drink the milk if there's a concern there that they're going to mix other stuff up. And that's a din, it's treif on a d'rabbanon level. Now, comes along Rav Moshe Feinstein and others, but mainly Rav Moshe Feinstein, who was famous for this, and said, look, in America today, there is no concern that there's adulterated milk. There's no concern of contamination because they're not allowed to, and they'll get into big trouble if they do. So said Rav Moshe Feinstein, I'm not overriding the gezeira of Chalav Yisrael. I don't have the authority to override a gezeira of Chazal. Even if I was on the base in the Sanhedrin of God, I couldn't do that. But what I can do is I can tell you that Chazal only made that gezeira when they thought there was a concern of contamination. Where there's no concern of contamination, Chazal never made that gezeira. Therefore, in America today, he say, Chazal, there is no gezeira. There never was a gezeira in that case. Now, that's an interesting way of learning the gezeira. Other people object to Rav Moshe and say to him, no, Chazal made a gezeira. You don't know why they made a gezeira. You're assuming that the gezeira was made because they're frightened of the contamination. That's the only reason. If that's the only reason, okay. But maybe that's not the only reason. So today in America, in North America, those who follow the Psaka of Moshe Feinstein hold that the milk in America today, which is not supervised, is kosher. It is the same as Chalav Yisrael. There is no gezeirah of Chalav Yisrael, because that milk never applied to that. And if you want to keep Chalav Yisrael, it's a chumrah, it's a nice chumrah, it's a chumrah. And Rav Moshe says, you should, it's a nice chumrah. According to those who don't learn like Rav Moshe, the milk is trey. It's not allowed. Why? Because Chazal made a gezeirah that you have to supervise the milk. Ah, you think it's because of this reason, that reason. How do you know? How do you know? The milk, therefore, you can't drink the milk. Therefore, depending on who you paskin like, the milk is either a chumrah or it's a din. I'll give you another example. Mai machronim. Why do we do mai machronim? Water washing, washing after, before benching. Washing before benching. Why do we do that? And what's the concern? There was a certain kind of salt, melach sedomit, which was very, very pungent, and Chazal were very concerned that if you have this salt on your fingers from the meal, and then you're going to go like this in your face, so then you, God forbid, could blind yourself. So they said, you have to wash your hands before you bench. So that's the question. Come along the Balei HaTosfos and said, okay, fine, that's the reason. That's where it comes from. That's a din d'rabbanan. We don't have that salt anymore. So that's it. That's the end of the halacha. Not because we're changing the chazal, but because it just doesn't apply anymore. Other people come along and say, no, that's not the only reason. There's loads of reasons. There's reasons of Kedusha, there's reasons of Kabbalah, there's reasons of all sorts of things. And therefore it absolutely applies today. Okay, we don't have this salt. Fine. So there are 1,000 other reasons. That's why the Sfaradi Psak, which is probably why Abby is saying this, the Sfari Psak on Mayim Achronim is that it's absolutely halacha, absolutely Mayim Achronim chova. You're not, you know, unless you say someone says Mayim Achronim chova, then you know you're not yotzei to the meal almost. So the Sfaradim absolutely do Mayim Achronim as a chova. That's why the women also do Mayim Achronim. Why not? They don't have dirty fingers. Whereas the Ashkenazim often follow Tosfot, which says that look, today Mayim Achronim may not be the same as the level of a chova. It's a minag. So different. And therefore, in each case, you have to work out, can you identify the reason, and is the reason still applicable?
Are you sorry?
I am not. I give you another example to think about, which is not for now, which is Chazal made a gezeirah. Oh, we never really did that whole sheet of all those gezeirahs that I brought, the listed examples of Chazal at the end of one of the sheets, but Chazal made a gezeirah that a woman is not allowed to remarry for 2 years after having a baby.
Because then you might forget to feed the other child.
Not forget, but the milk might, she might get pregnant, yeah. The milk will dry up, and you won't be able to feed the other child. Again, the Shiloh today is that still applicable? If that's the reason...
Yeah, after Bavadi Yosef, they said, can we have a child even though it's been not 2 years? And he said, because she got divorced, and it's even more so when they get divorced, because then you don't think that the father...
It's only when they get divorced.
Yeah,
If they're still married, there's no halacha, you're not allowed to have a child after 2 years.
They said that they don't think that the father will be the child support.
Right, exactly.
The child, but they went to Rabbi Yosef, and he said since it was a perfect divorce, and they were perfectly on friendly terms, and he was continuing to be the child support, then it was totally fine.
Oh, that's very interesting. I haven't learned that tshuva, but it's very interesting. So then, again, you're basically saying the reason is X. If the reason goes away, the halacha can change. So I'm not suggesting, even if there are gezeiras that we can't override today because of the circumstances, that the halacha can never develop and change. It can, but it changes in a very specific way, which is not the way that it used to be. Okay? Your question, then we'll move on.
So, with like a case like Ruth, then if you do something that is allowed in your time and then ends up becoming not allowed, you or your family, whatever the case may be, like, do they suffer the repercussions?
It sounds that way, doesn't it?
But why?
The halacha changed.
But, so what? The halacha was the halacha when you did it, and you didn't... You weren't over the halacha, so why should that affect you in the future? Like when we say like what people did before our generation, it was different. But that doesn't mean that they were wrong. They were following the halacha like it was in their time.
But you know something, it works in both directions. If the halacha can change, the halacha can change. If it can't, it can't. Meaning, if the halacha can change for the good, it could also change for some people, and it won't be so good.
But why does it affect the past?
It's not the past anymore, it's the present. If there's a psak in today in Mamzerus, and you go and ask a shaila, what's the status of these children? The fact that someone may have decided a shaila 30 years ago a different way, if a person is a mamzer, it means if they're the product of a that's very interesting. There isn't a statute of limitations in the same way. There maybe is in monetary things, but you know, you can always ask. We don't go looking for mamzerus. That's for sure. A mamzer is someone who is the product of an either adulterous or incestuous relationship. Meaning, if a woman is married and she doesn't have a divorce and she goes and has a relationship with someone else and produces a baby, so that baby is a mamzer. Okay?
Or if they have...
They can marry another mamzer, or can marry a convert.
If they have a baby with their brother...
Yeah, or if they have a baby from an incestuous relation. Baruch Hashem, it's a rarity. Mamzerus is very... It doesn't apply if people are not married. Illegitimacy in English world is not... You know, if a woman and a man have a baby and they're not married,
really?
The baby does not become a mamzer.
Really?
Absolutely. I mean, they shouldn't do that. But
if you marry someone...
It's only if she either has an incestuous or adulterous relationship. But if the couple are not married, the baby has no halachic...
Well, if a rabbi Rosden, this kid is not a mamzer, and then a rabbi in the future Rosden, yes, he was, so his children all then become mamzer.
So that's an interesting shaila as to how that works. I don't think you'll probably find most rabbonim who will paskin override somebody who said already that they want a mamzer, because in the case of mamzer, we don't go running to look after mamzeris. But the implications of the Briska Rav is that in principle that things can change going forward.
The woman who had the baby, she wasn't married, and the baby's not an
answer. No, absolutely not. Absolutely
well,
not.
He was married, he was married.
It doesn't make any difference.
Wait,
well, he's not allowed to cheat on his wife either. But it's clearly that's also minatera. But the baby will not become a mamzer if he goes and has a relationship with someone else.
But she's married, he's not married,
said it. Absolutely. Absolutely. Or if it's an incestuous relationship either way. Yeah, Adele. This applies to agunot, and this is really where it comes up. If a woman cannot, for whatever reason, get a divorce from her husband, or decides she doesn't want one, and she goes off and she gets remarried, or has a relationship with someone else, that's when it comes up now.
Or if
the
husband's gone.
Or if the husband's gone, and she, unless the husband's dead, or we think the husband's dead, which is a different situation. We go out of our way not to try and find mamzerus cases. There are all sorts of things Rabbi Moshe Feinstein in situations. There was a famous case under the chuppah where a woman admitted under the chuppah that the baby was a product, that the guy under the chuppah, the mother said to Rav Moshe under the chuppah that the guy was a product of an incestuous, or an adulterous relationship, that she'd had an affair 25 years earlier, and the baby was therefore, the guy who was about to get married was a mamzer, and she felt that she had to admit it at this stage.
Under the chuppah.
Like, right. And Rav Moshe didn't accept the edus. He said, I'm not accepting your testimony because you're not allowed to give edus to make yourself a rosha. That edus is inadmissible evidence in halacha, and therefore he ignored her and got on with the chuppah.
So if somebody admits, did everyone else
count? If that's the only evidence there is, then not. You can't. Confessions are not acceptable as evidence in Jewish law. Oh, that's a good shaila. If they did a DNA test, how does that work? Does DNA testing count as halachic? This is a question for Rabbi Apfel as to how that works. That's really fascinating. I don't know how much he knew. There are all sorts of situations.
But how about that? That's the wedding?
What do you mean, how would you... Yeah, he was doing Sadiq
Kedushin. Who made that public knowledge?
It was written up as a truth. He didn't talk about who the family was. Could have been, so he was in Sadiq Kedushin and thousands of families. No one would have ever known from that.
The mother really told it to a Rav Moshe under the chuppah without anyone else hearing.
Yeah, she took him to the side and said, I've got something I need to tell you.
And he's like...
It's like, you know, on the... In Christian weddings where they say, if anyone knows of any reason why this man or woman should not be joined in a holy matrimony, let them speak now. Well, if you give an edus against yourself, that edus is not in principle acceptable.
There's this woman who's Ethiopian, I think.
She admitted she was trying to prove that her father was there.
Okay, we need to move on, ladies. Michal, and then we move on.
Michal,
join them and move on. So, no, because then the woman has not committed a consensual relationship. If a woman is forced into a situation where that's not called having committed adultery, and as far as I'm aware, the child would not be a mamzer in this case. There may be an issue of her...
What if she's not married?
Well, there's certainly nothing to do with it. There's certainly no mamzeris. But there's an issue if she would be raped, God forbid, for her to be... For example, she's allowed to be married to her husband. A woman who has an affair... An extramarital affair is not allowed to go back to her husband, but that of course does not apply if she was raped and there was no consensual affair, and she is certainly allowed to go back to her husband unless the husband is a Cohen, and then it gets a bit difficult, and then you also have to kind of start analysing how do we know what happened and who said what happened, and no, because a Cohen is not allowed to marry a woman who's had certain sexual relationships even whether
married.
It doesn't matter. That's I'm not getting into that case now because it's a difficult, tragic, and complicated business.
If the guy had come forward and said, "This is actually my kid, not her husband's kid," then does that aid the?
And that's a good question. I don't know, but he's also giving a testimony about himself as a washer because he's not allowed to commit adultery either, and he did. So, anyway, guys, I've got to move on. I've got to move on because I have 5 or 6 things to do in the last 10 minutes. Now, let's do the last couple of things here. Another thing the rabbis cannot do is the rabbis cannot overrule the will of the people, which is so fascinating. Because Judaism is not a democracy in the modern sense of the world, but you see built into Chazal is the idea that if the people the people are not makabel, then Chazal don't have the authority. Look at number 9. Beis Din Shenir Lahem Ligzor Gezeira. If the Beis Din wants to, the Sanhedrin HaGadol, wants to make a new Gezeira, or Litzgan Takana, or Lanhig, or Lahanig Minhag, or to start a new Minhag, Tzrichil Hityashev Badava, they have to first take advice. They have to first sit down and think very careful. The later they have to know tchila. And initially, im roivat tzibur yuchayl el amud behem. Can the people take this? If this is not something that the people can take, they mustn't do it. Or im ein yuchayl el amud. Or la'olam. And in any event, ein gozrin gezera ala tzibur elim ken roivat tzibur yuchayl el amud behem. They are not allowed to make a gezera or a takana if the majority of people are just not capable of living up to or standing up to that. They're not allowed to do that. Says the Rambam, carrying on, Hari Shigazru based in Gezerah. Let's say they did make a Gezerah, the Dimu, and they thought Shiroi Bakali Chonel Amadot, that most people could do it. The Acha Shigazru, and after they made the Gezerah, Pikpaku, then people started complaining. The Loi Pashta Baroi Bakal, and it turned out that the majority of people had not taken it on. Hari Zubatot, it's void. They can't force the people to do it. So it's very interesting because the Sanhedrin have no authority to force people to do anything that the majority of the tzibur is unwilling to do. And finally, he says, "Gazru v'dinu shepasta b'chol Yisrael." If they made a gezerah, they thought it didn't make sense and it spread around. The amad adafa came shanim rabbis, and for years this went on. Ula achazman maruba, and after a long time, amad based in achera, later based in came ubarak, and they checked. B'chol Yisrael, the Jewish people of Iran, they saw she'enoi se gezerah poshetet, that the gezerah had not spread b'chol Yisrael. Yesh l'rishus nevatel, then they can override it. Afila hayapochet, they don't have to be gadol b'chochma minyan. So again, you see this idea of the people, if you like, having a say. And this classic example is Shemen Yisrael. Because the Mishnah in number 10 says, when they made the gezerah on Chalav Yisrael, so they also made a gezerah on Pat Yisrael, meaning you have to have bread baked by Jews, not by non-Jews. And they also made a gezerah on Shemen Yisrael. You have to have olive oil produced by Jews, meaning all olive oil produced by non-Jews, said Chazal, was going to be treif. And comes along Rebbe Yul Beis Dinoy, later on, 100, 200 years later, Rebbe and his Beis Din, Hitiru B'Shemen, they allowed the oil. So the Gemara says, how could this be? How could Rebbe, hundreds of years later, override a gezerah of Hillel and Shammai? So have a look at number 11. Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi, Heicha Matzil Mishra Takanta the Tami Dishama Vehilo. How could Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi possibly override this gezerah of people who are greater than them? And as the Rambam says, you can't override, even if you're greater, you can't override a gezerah. That's none. Ain based in Yochel, Levatel, Divrei based in Chavera, Eliim Kain, Godel, Heimen, Vachachma Minyan. So what answer does it eventually give? So the answer basically gives, if you go, Hoyel or Pashat Isurba of Yisrael, Shemen Loi Pashat Isurba of Yisrael. The people just never accepted the stringency of Shemen. If you think about that, you can live without milk, milk by non-Jews, but olive oil. Olive oil was the staple of the Mediterranean world. Once you turn around and say that all of the Greek olive oil and all of the olive oil by non-Jewish people is all trade, the people just basically said, I'm sorry, this is too far, we can't do with this. And therefore, Ad Hayom Hazeh, leaders of any community have to be very, very careful gzeiras or rules for the community, it's totally wrong to make a gzeira or any kind of rule that the majority of the community cannot take.
What do you mean totally wrong? It's not going to go into effect.
And it won't go into effect. Even if you're the Sanhedrin.
And
yes.
Pashtisrael also went out of effect.
Right? Well, Pashtisrael is a half-half, meaning bread which is really baked by a private non-Jewish person is still also. You can't eat it.
But there's a Jew on fire.
Yeah, the Jews involved, okay, that's different. What's called pas palta, Jews bake bread baked by non-Jews in a kind of industrial sense is allowed under many circumstances, which is different. But if your friend, if your non-Jewish friend at college decides she's going to bake you some muffins, so you have a really big shiloh of okay, fine, bread. No, let's leave muffins aside.
No, but if you have bakers in a bakery and completely kosher bakery.
So then a Jew has to stop, and then that starts the process. Yes, Nadiva.
So then, I understand the concept, but I don't get it because, how can people just decide? No, we're not going to listen to the rabbi.
So turn over the page. What gives the people the authority? And the answer is the Gemara says in Pesachim, Hanach lehem Yisrael, leave the people alone, trust the people. Im ein neviim heim, even though they're not neviim, b'nei neviim heim. The Jewish people have a collective nevuah. What are b'nei neviim? B'nei neviim are the people who are training to be neviim. They're not the children of neviim. B'nei neviim means the talmidim in Novi school, who are trying to get nevuah, but for some reason, I don't know, they can't quite get it yet. Because remember, we said that God can turn off the taps, if you like, for nevuah, but they're royal for nevuah, they're suitable for nevuah. Therefore, trust the Jewish people. The Jewish people have an instinct as to how they need to be led. Now, the question is, what's with today when the Jewish people as a whole are not religious and they're not educated, etc.? Do they still have this collective nevuah? Okay, so then we can have a discussion about that. But this is the answer to your question, Viva. The Jewish people themselves are not, they are ruled and they are also ruling in that sense. The tzibur is very, very powerful in that sense. Yes?
So is it a punishment of Arbalis that, number one, Judaism sounds harder, significantly more in terms of chumrot, in terms of not being able to rule on our own things, not having a more democratic and quote process? It sounds like it's really a punishment of our galus.
I agree, and I've said this before. When you say Shemona Esrei and you take three steps back, and you say, "Yihi Ratzon Lefanecha, Hashem Elokeinu Elokei Avoseinu, Sheyibani Beis Hamikdash V'mehera V'yameinu." What are the next three words? Meaning, please bring Mashiach in the Beit HaMikdash so we can have our proper Torah. We have Torah now. We have a chelik in Torah. Why are you davening for Mashiach so we'll have Torah? Torah is one of the few things that was left. The answer is yes, Torah, but not the Torah that we're meant to have. The Torah that we're meant to have is a Torah which is much more responsive, which is much more flexible in so many ways. And yes, we're in Golus, and we can't pretend we're not in Golus. And we can't pretend that we're, you know, it's all changed. On the other hand, some will turn around and say we can't pretend that nothing's changed. And that's the conversation we had at the beginning of the year about whether we're now in a new phase or not, etc. But that's not for now. But you're right, Hannah, we should cry not just over the fact that we have no Beis HaMikdash, but the fact that our halachic system doesn't work in the way that it's meant to work. Yes? If the Jews had not been makabel chicken as fleishik, then it wouldn't have taken effect. And by the way, when they wanted to bring in the mitzvah, the rabbonon of chicken being fleishik, there was a big disagreement between Chazal on that. Many of them felt that this was not appropriate and we should not make chicken fleishik. Chicken has to remain parav. And until fairly late, that was still a debate. But you're right, if the people would have turned around and said this is not possible, then it would not have had effect. The last thing, ladies. The last thing before I finish is that the Chazal don't normally make a gezerah on a gezerah. And I brought you these last sources to show you that it says there, Ushmatim is Mishmarati. You, Chazal, have a mitzvah to make fences around the Torah, around my Torah, says God, but not around your own Torah. And there are multiple examples of where Chazal will not make a fence and then a fence around that fence because they're just not able to do that. They're there to protect the Torah, not their own legislation. Sometimes they make multiple arrangements at the beginning because they feel that that's necessary to protect the Torah. So sometimes the Gemara comes out and says, isn't this a gezerah on a gezerah? Look at number 17 for a second. Rabbi Yitzchak Amar, gezerah mishum mashkim shizofu. So the question here is, there's a gezerah on eating eggs that were born in certain times, and the gezerah was because of a concern of things that squeezed out from the fruit themselves. That itself was a gezerah that they made in case you come to squeeze the fruit. How can we make a gezerah on a gezerah? So the Gemara answers, no, kulachada gezerahi. Meaning, Chazal can initially, put it this way, let's say this is the Torah law. They can make the gezeira, but they can't then later make a gezeira around the gezeira. But the first time, if they decided to make the gezeira out here, that they can do. That's what kulach hadegezeira means. Meaning they can make a bigger fence at the beginning if they want to, including more things. But they can't make a gezeira, stick with it, and then make another gezeira on the gezeira. That they can't do. There are a couple of... Yeah, exactly. And in Hilchos Shabbos, by the way, we find that the concept of shvus, of the rabbonos on Shabbos, it sometimes seems that they do make a gezeira on a gezeira in Hilchos Shabbos, because some gezeiras in Hilchos Shabbos almost take on a din of Doraisa. That's when we learn Hilchos Shabbos, we'll get to that more. And the last point I just wanted to make in number 19 is there's a general rule that Chazal never made a gezeira unless the situation was normal or common. Like for very far-fetched, unusual cases that might happen once in a blue moon, that their business is not to start making gezeiras on a whole tzibur for that. They make gezeiras for standard cases, and once they made them, they apply to all cases. Loy plug. They didn't say, once we made it, say, yes, we're not for you. But they wouldn't make gezeiras for things that were very unusual. So hopefully that gives you a little bit of a feel for the fact that, it's not just an unlimited authority. The authority is bounded. And next week, the Ezrat Hashem, and I've got more voice, we will get into groshas, and we'll have a whole understanding of that. Have a lovely, lovely day.